It's the show that's all about hockey. This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show, presented by Shaws and Star Market. Download their Just For You app and save today.
With a rocket.
Also brought to you by Rodenheiser Home Services and Sports Etc. Now, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers.
Welcome in to another edition of the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub as we get together once again on a Saturday morning. 2 full hours of Bruins talk, NHL talk, and your calls at 617-779-0985. I see the phone lines already lighting up as we get going here this morning. Not a shock after last night's game at the Garden. Bruins victorious over the Washington Capitals, but one of those games that people will be talking about for a while, both because of the hit by Tom Wilson on Brandon Carlo, but also because of the Bruins' reaction to it. And we'll get to all of that coming up over the course of the next couple of hours with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, who are with us as always. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
Well, I mean, taking out the part, obviously, about the concern over Brandon Carlo's condition, a fun and interesting night at the Garden last night. Let's start with the hit. What did you think? It's Tom Wilson, so that naturally, you know, colors a lot of people's thinking. Is it as bad as some people are making it out to be?
Yes.
I would agree.
Yes, it is. It's as bad as, well, I don't know who's I don't know who's making it out to be bad and who isn't, but I don't know how any objective watcher and anybody that knows, you know, something about the game can you know, find anything that's not dirty about it. It's so bad. And you take it to the shift and, you know, the Frederick thing. Wilson, hey, he plays the game on the edge. All right, we know that. And he's a good player. He throws big hits. He can change the complexion of a game. He was so, you know, incensed. You know, he tried to take a run at Frederick. He got a piece of him. Then he tried to take another run at Frederick. Frederick dropped a shoulder into him. They both went down. But, you know, if you try to hit somebody and you go down, you know, you're mad, right? The next hit he threw was on Carlo. And if anybody can say that he got more body than head, are you kidding me? No, he didn't. He got the head, and he drove it through the glass. Carlo had no idea it was coming. He's trying to avoid a hit from Verana. So you can't say that he put himself in a bad position there, right? He's being forechecked by Verana. He turns away from Verana, and Wilson comes from, you know, almost from behind. It wasn't a hit from behind. You know what I'm saying?
But he's kind of angling from, yeah, it's one of those
and
hits.
He drove through the head. I can't get past the fact that the referees didn't call a penalty. I can't get past that. Are you kidding me?
No, that was baffling. I think the other thing that the National Hockey League is going to look at, so the first thing that they're going to look at, was the head the main point of contact? The answer to that is yes. The other thing was, could Wilson have taken a better angle of approach? And I think the answer to that is yes, too. I recently watched the kid in San Jose, the rookie, Joachim Blichfeld. Until we play him, I don't have to get the name right. But he's the guy who drilled Nathan MacKinnon from the side, got a match penalty in that game, and then was suspended by the National Hockey League. And the first two things that the NHL brings up in the player safety video is that the head was the main point of contact, and Blichfeld could have taken a better angle of approach. If you look at Wilson's approach, he's not going for his chest. He's not going for his shoulder. He's going for the head.
It should have been a match or a major on the spot. Mm-hmm. And then, as you know, Judd had the rule book out immediately, and we were looking at it last night. They can. So if the referees looked at that and said, he got mostly body. He wasn't really the head. We'll make it 2 minutes. You know, which I don't agree with. I'm saying that they could have done that. They right. could have done that.
If they call a major, they can review it.
They can review it.
Yes.
And bring it down to a two-minute minor. They called nothing.
Well, and that ends up ultimately being partially responsible for what we see later, which is, and we're going to talk about the Bruins' response to it, but, you know, in that situation, you have to understand as an official, too, that by calling nothing, you have now escalated it for the rest of the game, right?
So that game could have gotten way more out of control.
It could have.
If Wilson didn't answer, okay, if he refused to answer to Tenorti, yeah, that thing could have gotten way out of control because now everybody's open season. You know what I mean? Like that's the way you I mean, I don't know if it's handled like that anymore, right? But that's kind of the mentality. If you're not going to answer for that hit, well, you know, everybody else becomes open season for hits and questionable hits. And it could have gotten out of control. The fact that he answered, I give him credit for that. But he knew it. Yeah. He knows it.
Well, the amazing thing about this is despite Tom Wilson being who he is, if this is a suspendable hit, if it is deemed a suspendable hit.
There's no if about it.
Well, but I'm basing it off of previous player safety rulings. If it is a suspendable hit, he is no longer considered a repeat offender. He's kept his nose clean long enough that he would not be considered.
Is that true?
Well, no.
I don't think that's true.
That's salary cap and for the CBA.
That's for how they take money from him.
Okay.
Yes.
That doesn't enter into a potential suspension?
No. I don't think so.
No, what'll happen is if they believe that it rises to the level of a suspendable hit, then at that point they can start to look at history, and then injury will be considered. But only until they reach the point that the hit rises to the level of supplemental discipline.
See, I thought the history only goes back
nope.
a certain
no.
level.
That's okay. only for how he's suspended.
No, trust me.
Excuse me, how he's fined, or you know, the money
the
that
fine.
He loses.
Okay.
They're not going to treat him like Joachim Blickfeld if they decide that this is a suspendable offense.
You don't want to treat
if they decide
like
it's suspendable,
Blickfeld.
then past history, by our understanding, definitely plays into it, and it doesn't matter how many years.
These are the notes that I have from the National Hockey League meetings that we begin the start of the season.
They don't always play out that way, though, Judd.
No.
All right, let's get to your phone calls here. I know a lot of you fired up this morning. 617-779-0985. Maria in Watertown is up first. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning. I just don't even know where to begin with the Department of Player I don't give a you-know-what, because that's what I'm calling them from here on out. I'm going to ask you gentlemen a very simple question. If that hit made by Tom Wilson was made by a certain member of the Boston Bruins, how quickly do you think that he would have been tossed from that game and in front of the disciplinary committee?
Well, because wait, Maria, hang on one second. Like, let's wait and hear how the player safety rules. And give them a chance to rule. They don't play again until tomorrow. Let's see how they rule first. I'm more upset at the referees.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to that. What I mean, I don't understand what is transpiring with the NHL officials. And it's just not related to the Boston Bruins. It's seemingly happening across the league. The fact that there was no penalty called, those gentlemen should not be allowed to ref another game until they understand that a player was hit in the head. I don't care what you think the intent is at that moment in time. That warranted a penalty of some sort. And it tarnishes the game, and it does a disservice to the players out on the ice when they see that type of nonsense going on.
Thanks for the call, Maria. I think a lot of it goes back, again, to, you know, Beersy, you mentioned, look, Tom Wilson is he's a good player, but these things happen around him a lot, right? He has these borderline or just totally over the line hits over the course of his career. So he has lost all benefit of the doubt about, you know, what his intent was. Or, you know, it's like you have guys out there who play the game the right way, and occasionally there's going to be, you know, somebody gets hurt. That's unavoidable. You have other guys who are, you know, fairly consistent with it, and their hits are late, or they're dirty or whatever. And this one certainly falls into that category.
No, I mean, he's not a good player. He's a really good player. He's a valuable part of that Capitals team. He's part of the reason that the Bruins have beefed up. You know, I mean, look at remember the game that the Bruins blew them out in the Garden, in the TD Garden, and you know, you had guys running around. Ovechkin was running around that game. Oshie ran McAvoy.
Right. For an empty netter.
You had Wilson was running around that game. This is part of the – I mean, it's absolutely part of the reason that the Bruins have kind of beefed up a little bit. And I'm not saying it was just that one game. But, you know, you wanted to make sure that you could answer to the Wilsons of the world. And he is – like I said, he's a guy that – the way that he plays, I mean, everybody wants him. Every team in the league would take him in a heartbeat. But he crossed the line last night. There's no question. He's crossed the line before. He crossed the line last night. And, I mean, I cannot get past the fact that there was no penalty call. It drives me nuts. It's not like it was away from the play. It was where the puck was.
Right.
Didn't we see the situation in
there's
I'm
one,
just looking
one
back.
Referee I'd give the benefit of the doubt because he was in the other corner and he probably couldn't see the impact because he was in the other corner. But you got three others out there. And there's no excuse for that.
Where you can get some help.
And you can get some help from the linesmen. They all got together. Sure. They all talked about it.
I'm thinking about the hit. You know, you start to go back in your memory bank. Okay, how could this possibly happen? Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. Ivan Barbashev drills Marcus Johansson. I don't think there was a single penalty called on that play.
Suspended.
Suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Suspended. Yeah. But for the other three officials, as Beersy points out, You got to be able to help.
When you got Bergeron, before the second period even starts, skating over to Wilson as he's stretching, like, just inside the blue line, you know, before the second period starts, and getting in his face over there. Look, nobody can defend this hit.
Well, Peter Laviolette could.
Ryan, you know, so what Stephen Walcom has tried to do with some of the officials, and one of the things that he stresses is you need to have a feel for the game. And if you have a feel for the game, then I think in that instance, to use their language, there was a better call to be made. Call a major penalty. Call 5 minutes for boarding. Go evaluate it.
If they have that at their disposal.
Yeah. Right. And if you don't agree with the video that you're being shown that a major should be issued, then reduce it to a minor penalty.
Let's call Charlie Coyle for a little love tap, you know, on a slash in the first period. Only penalty that was called in the first period.
Got to be a better feel. Got to be better awareness. That was a serious issue last night. But I'm telling you, I'm almost girding myself for NHL player safety to say that Tom Wilson did not apply that hit to the head as the main point of contact. I'm bracing myself for that.
I think a lot of us are. I think a lot of us are worried that that's exactly what's going to happen. That should be, as you mentioned, that should be the fallback position. In a situation like that, the official's fallback position should be, look, there's not only got to be a penalty there, but let's just call it 5 so we can look at it.
Things happen quick. I get it. Okay. All right. 5-minute major. Let's go look at it. No, it's not that bad. We'll make it 2. I don't think that was the case last night. I'm saying that they can do that.
Right. But if they don't call it at all, they can't. Right? They can't go look at it and then decide.
Correct.
So they'll default to 5 and then figure it out.
use the video. You have the video as a tool that you can use in your favor. What do we hear all the time? Oh, the game is fast. The game is fast. It's hard to call. All right, that's fine. Now you have an opportunity and a mechanism to slow the game down. At the very least, that's the direction that you should have gone, and that would have changed a big tenor of the game. Instead, you have frontier justice that took place, and as Beersey pointed out, if Tenorti's challenge is not accepted, well, then it's haywire last night at the Garden.
All right, we get right back to more of your calls coming up. 617-779-0985 as we get started on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show.
This is the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Near corner, Carlo. Oh. Wilson going for the big hit. He just drilled Carlo up high, and Carlo is down.
He got him in the head, and he came a long way to do it.
Animated earlier on the shift because of the checks that he tried to throw on Trent Frederick. Let's see what happens here.
He came a long way to do this, and he got him up high.
You could see it. He hit him clearly in the head. You know, Brandon's in an ambulance, goes to the hospital, obviously, from that hit. Clearly looked like, to me, got him right in the head. Defenseless player, predatory hit from a player that's done that before. So I don't understand why there wasn't a penalty called on the ice. They huddled up, but I did not get an explanation why. It's out of our hands after that. We've just got to play hockey.
Yeah, it's a good question, I think. It has to start from the players, to be totally honest with you. We're the ones that are playing the game. So, you know, I think there's, to go back to your first kind of the start of your question, I think there has been some improvement over the years, but, you know, there's obviously always work to be done. It's a fast game. I'll give you that. But that being said, I think we have to be smart. We have to think about consequences when we go for hits.
They're a good team. They play hard. We're a good team. You know, you knew it was going to be a good game. You know, that was a hit. Brando had his head down in the corner, and, you know, he took a liberty on a guy that was in a vulnerable spot. So that's a cheap shot there, and you know, we lost a great player. You know, it is great to see him skate off the ice by himself, but you know, he was obviously in a bad spot, and he's hurting, so that's a bad hit.
Here's some of the reaction of the Bruins to that hit on Brandon Carlo last night by Tom Wilson, including that last clip of Brad Marchand on Ness in between periods, dropping a couple words you can't say on television. Understandable. Now it's up to player safety, and what are they going to do about it? We'll continue to talk about that. We continue to take your calls here on the Shaws and Star Market Sports Hub Hockey Show. Let's go to Frank the Tank up next. Hey, Frank.
Hey, guys. Look, you know, I know that I sound like a broken record sometimes when I say this, and I know that it might annoy other hockey fans or whatever that might think that, you know, the game is different, and of course it is. But to me, this all stems back to implicating the instigator rule, where things cannot be taken care of right then and there. And, you know, I understand that the game has changed, but the one thing that has changed for the worst in the game, in my opinion, is the complete, total lack of respect for your fellow man on the ice. I don't mind guys looking to hit other guys to, you know, kill their girlfriend as a result. I don't mind it. I want to see guys playing hard, playing to hurt people, playing, but to be done the right way. And, you know, I really want to get to Bergeron, but, you know, it's just the lack of respect that has filtered its way into the NHL since the implication of the instigator rule. It makes me sick to see other players treat each other that way. It really, really does. The lack of immediate accountability on the ice, it drives me nuts.
All right, but, Frank, I want to hit on that point, because this is something that you hear from people a lot that kind of pine for the old time hockey is that, you know, when they put the instigator rule in, it changed things, and now guys feel like they're a little bit more free to run around with impunity. Do you think that makes as big of a difference as someone like Frank points out? I mean, look, Wilson, he fought Tenorti in the second period. He fought Frederick in the third period. You know, you can look at that and say, you know, that's a, you know, might not be everything that you want in terms of payback, but it's something. And, you know, Frederick did get the instigator on that, amazingly enough. But what's your feeling on that kind of overall point?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with it to a certain extent. I don't think it applied last night, though. That was a big pileup in the corner. Like, there wasn't going to be a... like, you couldn't get after Wilson at that juncture right there. I mean, everybody's on the ground. I mean, you got Carlo, who's hurt, who's at the bottom of the pile, right? I mean, so there's... And Verona cross-checking him, by the way, yeah, down afterwards. But that... So nothing was going to be done right there. It was done at the earliest moment. And that's when, you know, early in the second period. So I don't think it applied last night. I do think it does apply in certain situations, no question.
The other thing that I'm having a hard time with is Bruce Cassidy mentioned he didn't get an explanation from the officials on the ice. how do you not explain why Tom Wilson was able to skate away from that unscathed?
I got nothing. I got nothing, and apparently they didn't either. Max is in the truck. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. So that hit on Brandon Carlo, I thought it was really dirty. And to not call a penalty on that? Like, how do you not call a penalty on that? Like, I was sitting there watching it, and I was like, they're not going to call a penalty on that hit? Like, I was so pissed off. I'm glad that Jared Tenorti, you know, fought Wilson. You know, I think that, you know, amped up the Bruins. But it's like, how do you not call a penalty on that? That was the dirtiest hit I've seen in a while. It really pisses me off that the NHL, you know, officials couldn't take, like, they lost control of that game last night. And not to call a penalty I'm speechless right now. You know, how they didn't call that a penalty. I was so upset last night that they didn't call a penalty on him. Thanks for my call, guys.
Thanks for the call, Max. His comment line actually said more about the Bruins' reaction to it. Look, we heard some of the sound bites coming into the segment here, particularly the Marchand one that I pointed out, and heard from Bruce Cassidy and from Patrice and as well. But the Bruins did... I mean, the response that they got, top to bottom, was...
They handled it perfectly.
Was, look, we're going to take care of business physically with Wilson, and then we're going to blow the doors off of this team the rest of the game. And they, I mean, they came out in the second period. You mentioned that, you know, Bergeron going over and kind of getting in Wilson's face before the period even started. Like, you could tell the entire team, when that's happening, you can tell the entire team is ready to go. And they did exactly what you want them to do in that situation, which is come out and make Washington pay.
I loved Marchand. I loved Bergeron. And you know what? You can go up and down the lineup. It started in the first period, though, too. I just thought that the Bruins were engaged the way that they needed to be. They moved the puck well. They got out of their zone. They attacked. They put pressure on the Capitals' defense, you know, in the forecheck. You know, those are all things that Bruce Cassidy was preaching. Play with more pace. You know, get better on the forecheck. Put your dump-ins in spots where you can actually get a forecheck going instead of, you know... having the goalie play it, make one pass, and they're out of the zone. You know, there were so many things that they did well last night, and it gets overshadowed a bit because of everything else that happened. I get it. I understand that. But they played a much better game last night in terms of that pace and in terms of being relentless on the puck and getting in their faces, the Capitals' faces, and not allowing them to kind of freewheel a little bit. Not that they freewheeled so much in the game before. It's just the Bruins really couldn't manufacture a lot of a lot of press in that in the first game that they played against them,
they
if that makes any sense.
They were step slow, and the conversation was about pace and making quicker, better decisions. And they were able to get through that neutral zone. And the other thing that Bruce Cassidy had mentioned to us.
And it was up and down the lineup, Chuck. It wasn't just one line. It was
everybody.
Yeah.
Studnicka had chances. That whole line had chances. Richie scores a goal. You have Coyle, Frederick, and Smith involved. The top line collected 6 points last night. But it was the style they played. As Jared Tenorti mentioned to us after the game, the Bruins channeled their anger into the game. They didn't allow the Capitals to set up in the neutral zone the way they like to come against teams. And I think the Bruins knew that once they got pucks in, if they put them in the right spots and were playing with the right pace, that they could exploit the Capitals, and they did. Peter Laviolette mentioned too many backdoor tap-ins, backdoor plays. We could have done something better defensively. Our goaltenders had no chance, and that was the game that the Bruins played last night.
Beersey, as a player, how does a game like that kind of help gel the room? I know a lot of these guys have been together a long time, but you do have some new faces in there, guys that are still trying to establish themselves in the NHL. You've got a guy like Tenorti who, you know, has been with the team for less than a week. What does a game like that do for the team going forward? Obviously taking the part out about the questions over Carlo's availability in the near future.
Well, I mean, you see guys standing up for one another, you know, in different ways, in their own ways, right? And I think that goes a long way. I don't know if they needed that. I don't believe that they needed that. I think that they've had that from the start of the season here, more or less. But there are some new faces in there. And, you know, when you see stuff like that, it's just – it's infectious. It is. I'm a firm believer in that. And, you know that everybody's got your back. So, Tenorti, second game, drops the gloves. But it's more than that. It's just the response and the way that they played. And not like I said, I'm not going back to say that they needed it, but you asked me the question, and I think it goes a long way.
617-779-0985. More of your calls coming up, and we'll check in with Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com as well as we continue here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show. Go shopping, get rewards, and save at Shaw's and Star Market by downloading the Just For You app. Shaw's and Star Market, official partners of the Bruins Radio Network. More to come here on the Sports Hub.
The Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Dot, right circle, not in the slot, fires, he scores!
All things Bruins and the NHL. The Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He scores! Press the stop!
This is the Beast of the Week, presented by Toro.
And there's been several discussions, and the game has been bubbling. And now it's going to be Wilson dropping him with Tenorti. Both fighting right-handed. Two big men. Tenorti fires the right. Wilson with a couple of jersey jabs. Tenorti the same. Tenorti a right. Tenorti a right to the body. Tenorti's lost his helmet. They're against the glass near side. Wilson a right. Tenorti a right. Tenorti another right hand. Wilson a right that ducked. Wilson's lost his helmet. Wilson a right. And now the linesman will step in.
I'm giving the new guy the award this week, Jared Tenorti, not just for the fight against Tom Wilson last night, but also he drove 1,100 miles to join this team to avoid the quarantine from having to fly after he was picked up by waivers. He hopped in the car, drove from Nashville to Boston. That deserves an award. Jared Tenorti is our Beast of the Week, brought to you by Toro. Tackle the season's toughest snow with the Toro Power Max snowblower. It's compact but durable enough to handle the toughest winters and incredibly easy to use. From America's number one brand in snow and an official partner of the Boston Bruins, Toro, count on it. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers back here on the Shaws and Star Market Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, and now joined by our buddy Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Good morning, Ty.
Morning, guys. Busy night, huh?
Rather interesting one. Your overall thoughts on the hits? Will there be a suspension? If so, how long do you think would be adequate?
Well, the hit really didn't surprise me in the sense that you could tell that it was building to that moment. You look at the other end of the ice moments beforehand, he's going out with Frederick, and you kind of have a sense when the temperature is getting hot and you see a guy, you know, who's just running around like a heat-seeking missile, right? And I felt that Wilson was getting to that point. It's part of what makes him effective, but also part of what makes him dangerous, right? So saw it coming. Doesn't surprise me. He never learns.
Is that part of having a feel for the game?
What's that?
Is that part of having a feel for the game? You say you can sense it? I'm making a sarcastic point.
Talking about the
officials. That the referees can't figure that out?
Yeah, exactly. We can see it from six floors up, but they can't see it. He was flying around, right? And that was completely dirty. You watch it from multiple angles. He's going for nothing but the head. Nothing but the head. I mean, you watch it. There's an angle that they had last night from the bench side of the ice. And you can tell, I mean, he has a chance to go through the body. Nope, goes through the head. And that's this guy's deal. That's what he does. And you know, you could hear it last night on the ice. One of the players, you know, I think said, when are you going to learn? Kind of like, what's it going to take for you to learn? And that's kind of where I'm at. And I don't know how you missed that. There's about four things you can call right there. The only thing you can't call is nothing. And that's what they did.
So what are you thinking suspension wise? I mean, because that's going to be the big
wheel.
That's going to be the big question. And it, really it, you said spin the wheel. That's kind of where a lot of people are thinking is it, that a lot of these decisions that come out of the Department of Player Safety don't seem to have a lot of rhyme or reason behind them.
Well, yeah. So he doesn't have the repeat offender status in terms of fines, right? But they can go back and look and say, okay, you did this 3 years ago, you did this 2 years ago, and go from there. The thing is that I thought he got away with one last week or 10 days ago, whatever it was, with Pittsburgh's Mark Jankowski. I thought that was one where you could have looked at him and said, okay, you have a history. You know, this is, you can't do stuff like that. He blasts him in the neutral zone, nobody around. Yeah, the puck's gone. And he didn't get anything for that, as far as I know. So, again, spin the wheel. I mean, if it were me, I'd say, given the fact that it's a 56 game season, his last suspension was for 20, got reduced to 14, I believe. I would say 10 games, but who knows? I mean, I you just don't know with this stuff, but it sucks because, you know, Carlo has a concussion history. I think he has one confirmed, but I think there is another two in there that they describe as upper body. So now the Bruins lose a top four player for who knows how long. He was in a hospital last night. And Wilson's skating around still. So there's got to be something. You can't not do anything about this. That just sets the worst precedent moving forward.
Let's talk about that, you know, the Carlo aspect of this, which we have not gotten to this morning. But if he is sidelined for any significant amount of time, the Bruins have been dealing with a lot of injuries on the back end. There's been some guys getting into the lineup that maybe otherwise wouldn't have. Where does that leave them right now if Carlo is going to be out for a little while?
Well, practice the other day had a Vatkanainen and Tenorti pairing. I feel like that'd be the most natural one to go back to. John Moore hasn't he missed practice earlier this week, and his last effort was probably not what the Bruins wanted out of him. So you have that or Steve Kampfer, right? Like that feels like the most natural two off the top of my head. You know, unless you get Miller back, but he's not. Doesn't sound like he's close or there hasn't been that progression to say he's going to jump right back in. So those are looking like your two best options right now. But it does increase the burden on this defense in terms of the D zone play, right? I mean, you're already kind of losing. You're already without two of your bigger bodies in that regard with Lozon and Miller and Carlo. I mean, that's a huge one as well now. So the ask gets bigger for everybody out there. You know, Clifton, McAvoy, who's already playing, you know, almost half the game, it feels like. So that part's going to be tough. I mean, Carlo is one of these guys that similar to Grizzly, when they lost him, I said, "Ooh, you're going to feel this one a little bit more than you might realize." Carlo does so many little things for this team and eats so many minutes that if he's out for extended stretch, you're going to notice it for sure.
I was going to ask you about, you know, the trade deadline is just about a month away now. You know, we're starting to get more and more rumors. Teams are starting to figure out what they are and what they're not. And I was going to ask you about anyway, about, you know, maybe some trade targets that might be out there as we get a little closer to the deadline, guys that could become available. And again, if, you know, if Carlo is sidelined or even if he's not for a significant period of time, the expectation, I think, from a lot of people is that the Bruins are going to try to add something else on the back end. So do you have some people in mind or at least some teams that you're watching and saying this might be a place where the Bruins could go?
Well, the big one, I think, is Nashville. There was a report a couple weeks ago that said that the Preds only had three untouchables, and it was Josi, Ellis, and Pekarinen. So you look at Nashville's roster, right? I mean, Matthias Ekholm on the back end is a guy that on a pretty good contract. He's only 30 years old as well, so you can get something out of him there. The only problem with him is that he's under contract for beyond this year, right? So it does mess with your expansion protection list a little bit. So that part of it's difficult. But I like Nashville, you know, a few of their trade pieces, to be honest with you. But again, it's about finding that fit, right, between, you know, a quick fix or a long-term thing that makes you rethink your expansion protection. So Ekholm is that guy for me. You know, I'd have to take a deeper dive elsewhere, but if you're looking for that home run play on the back end, and if the injuries if you can't get a break here, I mean, maybe that's the best course of action here to best handle this postseason run.
You know, it's funny you bring that, you know, that up. Is the fact that his contract goes into next year in most years would be a plus, right? That would mean he has even more value. You go out and make a deal and it's not just a rental player. He's going to be here for longer than that. But the calculus changes this year for these GMs as they start to look at the deadline, because they have to figure out who's protected and who's not. And you don't want to give up a lot for a guy who turns into a rental player because you don't have a spot to protect him.
Yeah, that part of it's been brutal. And you look at sort of the market, too, in terms of guys that are out there who are true rentals, right? Like Buffalo has Brandon Montour. Detroit has Patrick Nemeth and Mark Stahl. And it's like, yeah, I mean, that's nice, but are they substantially better than what you have right now? You know, and that's what you run into, right? So that part of it's going to be hard for, I think, any GM. And I think that's, you know, it's going to be I feel like it's going to be a buyer's market. I mean, we're going to have to wait and see what the first big trade is, but you know, there are going to be sellers, but at what price, given what we just talked about, right? Like, you don't want to have to lose a young guy or lose the player you're traded for because you can't protect him. So I wonder how that affects prices moving forward, and as well as the injury situation, right? If the Bruins are down three defensemen, I think teams are going to say, well, you need this guy, you know, so what's that price going to be? We're going to have to wait and see.
Bruins, you know, after the win last night, a point out of first place behind the Capitals and the Islanders right now. Haven't even reached the midway point of the season, but you also have to look at it and say, you know, what are we, 35 games left to go in the regular season, right? I mean, it's like during an 82 game season, we'd start to look at this and it's like, all right, guys, it's starting to think about trying to ramp up for the playoffs. So I looked at last night's game and the series of games that we have seen between the Bruins and the Capitals, and it's physical. It's at times just downright nasty. And a lot of these games have been close, right? There's been a couple of overtime games in there. This is a potential playoff opponent for this team when they get there. How do you see that matchup? And is this a team? I mean, it would be a hell of an exciting series, I feel like, but is this a team that's a direct threat to the Bruins if they want to advance in the postseason this year?
They're definitely a direct threat, but I don't look at them as I looked at them in years past, where I thought you can't beat this team. I think you can beat this team. I'm not the biggest believer in their goaltenders. That doesn't just come from last night. I don't fear them like I feared Holtby against the Bruins. Obviously, because he was posting like a 940 for almost a decade, it was pretty brutal. Their defense is bigger, yes, but I felt that last night you were beginning to see how the Bruins could create some cracks in them, getting a step on them, especially. It was weird watching, you know, seeing Chara on the other side of the ice, and you're noticing how the Bruins were beating him to pucks. I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's why that whole thing happened this past offseason. So I do think they're a beatable defense. Can they do it over seven games and keep Ovechkin and Oshie and Wilson and guys like that at bay? That remains to be seen. But I do think that this is a winnable series to the Bruins. I do think it's going to happen, to be honest with you. I think it is Boston, Washington in the East Division. But I think the Bruins have as good a chance of beating them as they do Philly, for that matter. I don't fear the Capitals like I did in years past.
All right, last thing for you, Ty, is there was a report this week during the Bruins game on Wednesday night from Bob McKenzie on NBC Sports Network talking about the future of the Bruins goaltenders. Both Rask and Halak have expiring contracts this year. What, if anything, have you heard about their status? Does it match up with McKenzie's report that, you know, the Bruins would like to talk to one or both of those guys during this season and try to figure this out? That's obviously a really important decision to be made on all sides here as to what the Bruins' goaltending situation is going to look like in the next few years, as well as for a couple of guys who have the potential to be free agents at the end of the year.
Yeah, so personally, I haven't heard anything about this. I know before the season, Tuukka was very sort of, you know, if it happens kind of thing, talking about negotiating in season. He wasn't against it, but he didn't seem like he needed to get done in season. I wrote about this on 985sportshub.com this week. I think that you look at the extensions for Pekka Rinne back in 2018 and Marc-Andre Fleury, his three-year extension with Vegas a couple of years back as well. That's sort of the template, right? That you got a guy entering his mid-30s or in his mid-30s. He's still playing at a high level. And so that Fleury deal was 3 years, $21 million. The Rinne deal was 2 years and $10 million. Tuukka's probably in the middle somewhere. I think I would say 3 years. If you gave him the same contract he has now, $7 million a year, you do a 2 or 3 year extension. If you go a little bit longer, maybe it goes down to six. But he's still playing at a high level. And this is where he wants to be. So you can't expect some sort of discount, you'd think. But where they land on that is really interesting, right? Because I do think that Tuukka, just judging on what he said in the past and how he's approached it, I feel like he really doesn't want another 5 or 6 year deal. He'd prefer that 2 to 3 year extension and then see where he is. So I think that's where they'll land if they do hammer out an extension. But those are some comparables that I looked at and said, okay, that makes sense for Tuukka based on his age, play, and where the team is going.
I think McKenzie mentioned it the other night. It's like the bigger, you know, the big question with Tuukka over the last year or so has been, how much longer does he want to play? You know, does he want to play as long as he can, or is he willing to walk away in the next 2 or 3 years, or maybe even sooner than that? Is a legitimate question that has come up with him over the course of the last year.
Yeah, honestly, I did find it telling that when he was talking about his future back in January, he said, oh, if I can play 1 to 2 or 3 more years, you know, that's good with me. Or, you know, hopefully I'm good enough to play another 1 to 3 years. So I kind of looked at that, and he's always forthcoming. He's always honest. He's blunt, and it gets sort of construed as him not caring. It's just the way he kind of delivers. He's very dry. And I was like, okay, 3 years. That's where he's at right now mentally. And that makes sense. You know, he's talked about his family before, how important that is. And, you know, he likes being a dad, right? So I don't think he wants to play until he's, you know, 41 years old. So I think the 3 year deal or 3 more years of Tuukka, I think that makes the most sense.
What about the other side of that? What about Halak? I mean, he's been terrific as kind of the 1A to, or the 1B to Tuukka's 1A since he's been here. But at some point, you got to give the guys coming up through the system a look, right?
Yeah, and they've been pretty cognizant of that, right? They never want to shut a player out of a job opportunity. And I know Daniel Vladar is off to a hot start in the AHL. Don Sweeney was actually in Marlboro the other day to watch Providence play. Maybe he's getting a closer look at him. I mean, the rest of the team as a whole, really. But you know, Vladar's been good. Swayman's been good. Where are these guys at in their development? I would love to see Vladar for a game that isn't a relief outing against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I really would love to see where he's at development-wise. I don't know if you can do that this year, just based on everything. But they're going to have to make that call, right? And if and that's a tough call, because if you're wrong, I mean, that's, we've seen it before. It's brutal. It's brutal if you don't have a goaltender you can trust as a backup, because now you're playing Tuukka for 62 games or whatever, and they don't want to do that. So that's something that they need to make the right call on that. It's just a matter of, you know, if you're wrong, oof, is it brutal? I mean, they saw it, what, in 2014-15 when they had Svedberg, and Claude just didn't trust him at all. Just didn't trust him and wouldn't play him down the stretch at all.
Ty Anderson, you can read his Bruins coverage at 98.5thesportshub.com, and he joins us each week on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Ty, appreciate it. Talk to you next Saturday.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
All right, it is time to give you a chance to take a little something home today. Caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a $100 gift card to Sports Etc. Everything for hockey and more at 1303 Mass Ave in Arlington. Online at sportsetc.net, Boston's best hockey shop. 617-931-0985. Caller 10 gets the gift card. We will continue with your calls in hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, coming up next.
This is the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here on the Shaw's and Star Market Hockey Show here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.